Revolutionary talk for revolutionary times. Liberty Talk FM.
It's a marvelous night for a moon dance with the stars up above in your eyes. A fantabulous night to make romance neath the cover of October skies.
What's up? What's up, everybody? Welcome aboard to the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz with you. And, you know, what a wild week we've had to all do nothing. It's amazing. We get excited. A lot of false starts, a lot of movement, but at the end, they rally him, then they break him, then they rally him. And we have one of the bigger tug of wars between the Bulls and the Bears that we've seen in quite some time. And all the while we're sitting here watching this, the ranges are getting tighter and tighter and tighter. And eventually, the market will make a major breakout. And breakout doesn't necessarily mean up. Breakout is break out from this consolidating range and start that's either resume the long-term uptrend we've been in or start the new downtrend. There's no way really to tell where we will go from here because, you know, I can make the case for both. I can make the case that we should go down because of all the lack of good data. You know, we know that the fundamental data of the market sucks. Okay, jobs suck, retail sales, everything. There's not really one good thing out there. Okay, and then, of course, but on the other side of the coin, or as the Two-Face from Seinfeld George says, it could go up because we are prevailing to the upside over time. We've got the free money is still the cheap money, which still allows major corporations to buy back their stock and to borrow money and to do that. So when you look at it, you go, which way can it go? You know, if you remember from the cartoons, which way did he go? Which Elmer Fudd, which way did he go? Which way did he go? But at the end of the day, it's hard to say. Now, again, I believe that the next big move will be to the downside, but I cannot obviously time it, nor can I tell you, you know, that it's a definite, that it's a guarantee. But just from, you know, the years of experience that I've had in the markets, it looks to me that the market is now ready to start moving the other way. Because if you subscribe to the theory that all these guys are buying, you go, okay, great, then it's about time to sell. Because you're now starting to see a couple of key points. Margin debt at record highs. Now, what does that mean? Well, it means potentially that greed is starting to take over from the chase for yield. So margin debt is higher. We are now starting to see back in, you know, what we didn't learn enough from the first time through. We've now got, you know, mortgages available for about 3%. And the qualifications have once again slid down the wire. Okay, I guess Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac didn't teach us the first time down, so now we want to go for that again and have the potential of putting people in spots that they can't afford to be in. Doesn't make a lot of sense to me, but, you know, who am I? So that could be a major issue eventually. We've got a lot of people, a lot of money in this market that does not want to be in this market. It has been forced or manhandled to be put there because you continue to get, again, the chase for yield. The biggest linchpin or the key in this whole thing is the money from fixed income that really prefers to be in fixed income. You know, there's a lot of people in the money now. The markets themselves don't have a tremendous amount of participation from the masses, but the people that are in the market are people that could no longer put money in the bank, put money in bonds, and say, I'm comfortable. That's going to help me. You've now got those people that, again, and I worry about these people the most because, A, I know they don't want to be in the market, and B, you've got the concern that they've saved, worked and saved their entire life to put together a little bundle, and they were their dream was to be able to live off of the money that was generated by the money that they saved. And of course, what we're seeing now is that because it's very hard to get yield anywhere, is we've seen that these long-term accounts that people have scrimped and saved for, they are now having to dip into their principal. And nobody wants to dip in that principal because that is always your case money for your life, because you know, nobody knows how long you're going to live. So one of the bigger problems is if you're out chasing yield and now all of a sudden the market collapses, and although you were getting these great dividends and everybody told you, oh yeah, 5%, 3%, whatever it is, oh, it's more than the 10-year. What they failed to tell you that if the market collapses, and you know, GE, for example, went from 42 to 6 in the collapse, if you lose 80% of the principal, how good is the 5% dividend? So again, these are things that are concerning to me that indicate a more likelihood that we're going down. We have seen over the last couple of days and last couple of weeks, but more prevalent the last couple of days, very quietly, gold has started to gain some momentum. Now, gold is not an asset class you buy for yield. Gold is an asset class you buy for growth. Now, many still believe that gold is the benchmark or the place you run for another currency. I don't happen to agree with that theory of gold. However, I do believe that everybody should own a little bit, you know, in your portfolio, because you will get some appreciation over time. But at the end, what we're seeing now is a big flow. And of course, we saw on Wednesday, we saw gold make a giant move. Now, the final tally for gold is not in yet, because basically, as you've heard, you know, here on the Bubba Show, as we've been benchmarking it between 1180 and 1220. Well, we're still not through 1220, so it's not like we're going straight up. More likely to see, it might be a little bit of a dip back. But I think what you're seeing is as the dollar now starts to weaken, you could see some more action into the gold market. Again, I'm not a raving bull at these levels. I did on Monday on Bloomberg TV buy gold at 1180. And got the desired move that I expected. Now, I would think it's somewhere here. There would probably be a little bit of profit taking. But again, I'm not guaranteeing it. I do think it's good. I think I'd like to own gold. I'd like to own some silver. I think silver is still a value play. But when you buy gold or silver, you are not buying them for yield. You're not buying them for growth today. You're buying them as a longer-term investment that you hope will appreciate over time and at least protect some of your asset base that is in paper assets that move and fluctuate and can have these major meltdowns. And not that the metals can't have them either, but the one thing about the metals is they're not going out of business. So you do have something, you have what they call, it's called a hard asset that you can hold. But all in all, the economy itself does not look great. Okay. Now, again, I don't want to be the doomsayer, but, you know, unfortunately, the best country in the world, the United States of America, and the biggest corporation in the world, the United States of America, is failing. And they're failing because of policies and politics and things that don't make sense, which at the end is really creating much more pressure on the economy. Now, the economy and the stock market, as we've have learned, and I hope you've learned this over the last 6 years, are not necessarily the same, nor do they necessarily have the same interest for everybody. Just something important for you to understand where we are when we see these things happening, because at the end of the day, you know, it's all about where we are and can we grow and can we continue to develop products, continue to deliver and continue to grow our local companies and not worried about building overseas. So we've seen now a pretty big move in the euro currency. So from the euro currency going to be worthless, and now all of a sudden it became exciting again, and they're buying it. And we'll see at the end how it all plays out here. But these are what we're looking at. We're going to step out here for a break, and we'll be back with Jane King. But remember, check out thebubbashow.org and get yourself signed up for the Bubba Report. $99 a year gets you a minimum of 12 issues of some great writing and great market information that will put you in the best position. This is The Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horace will be right back after the break.
When love runs high in the this time.
Welcome back to the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz has become a ritual here, and one of my favorites, my friend Jane King, Lila Max Media, the Ka-Ching Report, and boy, I'll tell you, you can catch her in so many markets now. It'll be Jane King all the time. What's up, Jane?
Yeah, well, you know, it's fun, and it keeps me busy and keeps me out of trouble. So, you know, as long as I'm out of trouble, everything's good.
Yeah, that's for sure. And, of course, you are just, you know, busy, and, of course, two kids and a husband, and, you know, running all over the place. And where are your travels taking you off to next? I know you're going away soon somewhere.
Yeah, we're going to Utah next week. So, very excited. I have never been to Utah. So we're going to be in Salt Lake City and then take a trip to southern Utah to the national parks, which are world famous. And we're going to stay on a buffalo preserve. So talk about totally different than New York City. We're going to stay like out in the middle of nowhere with buffalo walking around.
So as we've been chatting for the last, you know, few months, and, you know, we talk about how the difference is between New York and the rest of the world. And, you know, it seems to me that difference, you know, keeps getting bigger. I mean, and we just had, some big things happen in the auction world, and there's been like billions of dollars of sales of art and things like that. But what's going on? What are you seeing, Jane? Again, you're a pretty good judge because you're on nationally from coast to coast, so you're in a lot of different markets. What are you seeing going on here?
Yeah, well, what a crazy art auction that was. It was a 179, right? $179 million for that Picasso painting. You know, I like Picasso, and I certainly enjoy art, but my goodness, I mean, you know, was it a Chinese buyer? We don't know. Anonymous. So, interesting. In fact, Christie's, I think, just surpassed $1 billion in sales, and of course, so that Picasso helped push them over that this year. Well, it seems nuts, but, I mean, you know, here we are, the Dow's back up close to record highs. It's been an interesting week. We started to see these bond yields go up a little bit. That spooked the markets earlier this week, fears of inflation, you know, but we're really not seeing that in terms of the numbers. It's an interesting mixed bag. Job growth is starting to slow down. There's ADP numbers state by state. We're showing slow growth in some of the big economic states like Florida and Texas, where Texas hurt by oil. But so there's certainly some signs out there that aren't so great about the economy, but yet, and here we sit with the stock market, 18,000, and it doesn't seem to be too upset about anything yet.
No, it doesn't seem like, you know, my contention now is that we've obviously been in a consolidation pattern from a technical standpoint, and we're going to have a major move. A major move is brewing. It could be up or down, and I could make a case for both. But, you know, when I look around and, you know, I look at middle America and I look at average America and I go, they're not really benefiting from all of this money and what's going on. And, of course, the wealth disparity is getting much wider. Does that have any concern to you?
Absolutely. I mean, it really does. And I just can't believe this hasn't become more of an issue. These college graduates this year are having the most debt ever, some $36,000 on average when they graduate. So that immediately sets them off in the workforce at a disadvantage. I mean, they can't buy a home. Everything's going to be delayed for them in terms of investing in assets, investing in stocks. They got to pay down that. And that is if they can find a good paying job, which there's really only a few majors that are paying really well, and most of those are in computer science and engineering. So I don't see this disparity changing anytime soon. You know, there are stories about people who are having trouble just meeting their monthly bills and don't have any savings at all, or a couple of $1,000s, and then you have people paying $179 million for a painting. So it's a huge disparity, and I'm not sure how this is going to end, but I can't imagine it will end well.
And obviously, you know that I agree with that. But again, the ending, you know, unfortunately, this is not a movie. It doesn't have to end until it's ready to end. And that could be any time along the line. So, you know, now we're, you know, as you are also, you know, have a farming background as well. And, you know, we're seeing some really strange things happen, you know, throughout the farming community. And you know, there's a lot of people on both sides of this market. And now that we've seen the dollar, you know, actually really get thrashed pretty good this week, does that help the farming community, in your opinion?
Well, it should, but having growing up on a farm, it's really all about weather, I know, and some of the other things are secondary. Corn, worst performing commodity so far this year. Lean hogs, best performing. So there's a big stamp of approval for hedging if you're a farmer. I have a little bit of a few different things. Like my brother has hogs, and then he also of corn, so I guess he's, you know, doing okay there, or at least protected himself. So, farming and the planting season seems to have gotten off to a good start this year. Soybean supplies bigger than expected. That number just coming from the USDA this week. As long as weather cooperates, especially during those, the crucial pollinations in July for the corn, and then August is a key month for soybeans. As long as weather cooperates, we could have another monster crop this year.
Now, wouldn't the farmers like to have probably maybe a bad weather year this year because they've got so much in storage?
Yeah, I mean, well, you'd think so. Although I have learned over the years, and I've asked, my family, would you rather have high prices and bad weather or a big crop and low prices? And consistently, they have said a big crop. They'd rather have something to sell than nothing to sell and sitting there staring at high prices but nothing to sell. And they do still have a lot in storage, but a lot of farmers still, they can do a lot of the marketing. They can forward sell, they can store, they can play the futures market. So I think a big crop, even though the prices are low, it still gives them options. Whereas if they don't have a crop at all, that doesn't give them any options at all. I remember, and this was probably about 15 years ago, my family's in Indiana. There was a drought out west. Iowa was hit hard. And then out east, Ohio was hit hard. And they were kind of in the sweet spot there. So they had a good crop and high prices. But that happens maybe a couple times in a career. So, they're given everything. They'd rather have a crop to sell, and then they can figure out what to do with it.
Now, let me ask you a question. Again, since you're in a little bit from the business, and you're a business person, so you kind of understand it all from every standpoint. One of my contentions is that even though prices may be a little bit lower than we remember in recent history, of course, going back way in history, they're higher, but in recent history, but isn't the technology so much better, and aren't they able to produce more now at a less of a cost?
Oh, yeah. Technology is definitely better. The hybrids are better. They can resist problems easier than they used to. So the crops are better in addition to they just had really good growing weather the past few years. Now, it was, 2012, I believe, when we had that drought. So that was a year to remember. That was kind of an epic drought, or at least one, that we haven't seen in quite some time. But since then, they've had good weather. I remember when I first started getting interested in the commodity market. Beans were around $6, and I believe corn may have fallen below $1 briefly. So the prices that we have now are not bad when you consider where we were in the late 90s, but they're still, not where farmers would like to be. That was certainly nice for a few years there, a couple years ago.
And that's great. I mean, and that's good. So retail sales the other day, another miss, basically, and basically we've been going down since 2011. What's your take?
I just don't think, I look around at our house, and I'm like, there isn't a darn thing I need. I mean, it's, if it wasn't for my kids, I probably wouldn't buy anything but groceries. I mean, I have enough clothes. We don't need any furniture. I mean, my kids want toys all the time. But I just don't think there's anything compelling out there. We really were very consumer-oriented in the 90s, and even from 2000 to, the financial crisis. And I think people kind of took a step back, and they're like, why do I have all this stuff? Do I really need more things? Or just outside of electronics and technology and smartphones, things like that, there's really not a lot of things I feel people really want to go out and buy and need right now. And I think they'd just rather put the money away. They'd rather pay down debt. And it's probably a wise thing to do. I mean, I know it's not great for our economy, but in terms of people's personal balance sheets, it's a good thing to do.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more because, and I'm, right in that sweet spot because I got kids in college. So although the tuition is high, I'm not spending as nearly as much on stuff. Right. So when they graduate, I'm going to have, I'm going to immediately get a raise because I'm not going to have to buy all this stuff and all these lessons and all the other stuff. And I know it's very hard to be a parent today because costs are so high, especially in New York City. And, depending on what school system you're doing and all the other stuff, it makes it extremely challenging for the average person to really get by.
It really is. I mean, just, there's summer programs or almost $9,000. So that's just, you know, for them to do a camp. And they're staying in the city. I mean, they're not going to any fancy, you know, overnight camp in New Hampshire or anything. So it's expensive to raise a kid in the city, for sure. But they do have a lot of benefits by being in New York as well. My son met one of the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles this past week. So, you know, that made his week. So he's very happy about that. They're filming in my neighborhood, and the guy was super cool. He took a picture with him.
That's awesome. And this has been Jane King from Lila Max Media, the Ka-Ching Report, which can be found at thebubbashow.org as well. Jane King, you are always a breath of fresh air. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you.
This is The Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz will be right back after the break. And make sure you get the Ka-Ching Report off of thebubbashow.org. We'll be right back after the break. What's up, everybody? Bubba here. It's finally here, the long-awaited Bubba Report, bringing you news from all the trading floors across the globe. We've got Scott Chalady, the cow guy, as seen on CNBC, Fox, and Bloomberg. We've got Keith Bliss, CNBC, Fox, and a floor trader at the New York Stock Exchange. We've got The Badger, who writes the hot topics in the political news. We've got myself putting together my own unique indexes that will help you give you a better idea of what's going on in the market. All you need to do to get a hold of the Bubba Report is go to thebubbashow.org and sign up for the newsletter, or you can email me direct at bubba@thebubbashow.org. We want you to have this report because we've got over 150 years of experience talking about markets, getting ready for the trading, and puts you in the best position to have successful. So email me at bubba@thebubbashow.org to get a copy of your report, or go right to the website, thebubbashow.org. Make sure you get it. It's a must-have for every investor and trader. The Bubba Report.
Trust. For nearly four decades, that is the reputation Roberts & Roberts Brokerage has forged with their customers. Now, with their full e-commerce website, rrbi.co, it's easier than ever to buy or sell precious metals via Bitcoin or major credit card. Visit them online at rrbi.co or call 800-874-9760 to speak with an experienced professional today. Roberts & Roberts, when you're serious about precious metals.
Welcome back to the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz, and has become a tradition, I think, one of the smartest guys in the industry, but also one of the guys that really understands the overall concept of what a market means. My friend Mike McClone from ETFSecurities.com. Mike, what's up, man?
Hey, Todd. Thanks for having me back. And that's a lot to live up to. I like to think I'm definitely not smart, but one thing I like to do is listen and hear what people say and dig into the actual details. And I think that's what we can discuss a little bit today about some of the data that's come up recently.
You know, and I think that that's important. You know, it seems to me that we have forgotten about anything of the fundamental. Now, I'm not a fundamental trader. I'm a technical trader, and, you know, many of us are. And, of course, when we were market makers, we were just paper traders. We didn't care. We just had to, you know, make a market. But now, you know, as we continue into this now, you know, six-year run into a market, you know, I think one of the key indicators that indicates to me there's trouble, and I've been saying this for over a year, but I think you really have a great perspective of it, and that's retail sales. I mean, I know Wednesday retail sales came out, and I think they came out flat but worse than expected, and of course, they've been declining for quite a while, haven't they?
Yeah, that's the issue I've had is Wednesday, 1 month is really insignificant. It's flat. It's, you know, again, another disappointment. You know, we're kind of getting used to that. But to me, it's what really has been happening with retail sales historically. So what I do is I take the 12-month sum, total 12-month retail sales. You can't really put, you know, there's no, and when you have 12 months, there's no, you know, it includes the entire 12-month period a year. And I analyze that total 12 months, and you look at as of April, the total sum of retail sales is up 0.9%. Now, that's not so great. Now, you expect if the economy hopefully be grow around 2-3%. Two-thirds of our economy is the consumer, and the consumer spends, or they should spend. And just to put that in historical context, the last time 12 months sum of retail sales was up 0.9% was right towards the end of the recession in October of 2009. So I look at this sum, you know, it was running pretty well. 2011, the 12-month sum of retail sales was running around 8%, but it's peaked, and since then, it's now it's running near zero. and or 0.9%. And that's what I find very disconcerting. This is despite the fact we're supposed to get a boost from lower energy prices, and despite the fact we're supposed to be doing well with, you know, with all these unemployment numbers that are looking very good. To me, it's an indication that if you just follow the money, the average, you know, U.S. consumer is just not spending, and that's a bit of a concern.
Well, you know, you mentioned the concern, and of course, I've had this concern for a while, because what I don't really see is, well, here's what I do see, and then I'll tell you what I don't see. I see big companies loading up on cash. I see big companies buying back their stock. I see big companies doing all kinds of things that, obviously, I'd be doing the same thing if I were them, because if I had access to this kind of money and could get it for free, it would be okay. But what I don't see is I don't see growth in any real industry. Maybe tech, you know, I'm not a real savvy tech guy, but maybe in the tech there's some real growth. But in real companies that we look at every day, the Caterpillars of the world, the retailers of the world, they're not growing. And where is the growth going to come from? I mean, we just saw GDP, which we've continued to always say, well, it was the weather. It's the weather. How about we're just not growing? What do you think?
Well, I think that's what this data shows. And this is part of this new normal and part of that most people have been talking about. I mean, if you look at, you know, the demographic trends are completely favor that. First of all, total retail sales, it's a percentage. That should be better than it is. It isn't. It isn't. We look at some of this other data that's come out that I've really dug into, like auto sales. Auto sales, you know, they're up above 16 million a year now. That's great, 16.5 million. That's about the same, the average auto sales that we had, you know, before the crisis in 2000, 2005, that whole area, 2007. But if you look at it, that's when the population was probably maybe 30 to 40 million less than we are now. Now, that's bad, because if, you know, when you have population has increased, who knows, maybe 10%, and auto sales are still at the same level, that's not a good sign. So I like to factor weight these things into auto sales. Look at home sales. You know, new home sales and existing home sales are running close to a million units a year. Now, that is much less than it was in the past, but also our population is higher. The difference also is not only is the population aging, but it's growing much slowly, more slowly. Now you get, I think the average population in this country is now growing between 0.5% to 0.6% a year. And, you know, 10 years ago it was growing 1% a year. So to me, that big shift globally is happening. We're not seeing this pickup in retail sales, not seeing this pickup consumers. And then you hear, and we know most people are now working two jobs just to get by to meet their bills. So to me, this thing, yes, so corporations are making money, their earnings are great, but overall, if you look at the big picture, we're in this for a long haul. And that is, this new normal should last quite a while. And I mean, for this to change, I'd love to see an increase in retail sales. That's just not happening. So we need to see something there. We need to see something pick up. Hopefully it's just a soft patch. But for now, this, you know, this whole Fed tightening rhetoric that the economy is picking up, we have to worry about inflation, just doesn't seem to make a lot of sense if you look at what really is happening with your average consumer.
And I couldn't agree with you more. I mean, I just see trouble. I see trouble everywhere I look. I see problems that you need to be solved, you know, and I was on Fox the other day, and I said, you know, the biggest problem is the biggest corporation in the world and the greatest corporation in the world and the greatest country in the world, the United States of America, the corporation is a broken down machine. And we're not getting any help from anybody here to make things better. We're everything, in my opinion, and I don't want to put words in your mouth, in my opinion, everything the Fed has done since the 2009 debacle, okay, when Ben Bernanke and those guys were sweating bullets trying to figure out what to do, has been wrong and has not helped the economy the way that they intended it to, nor as they expected it to. What's your thoughts?
Well, I think this is a good, if we want to do a point counterpoint, I guess this is a good area we disagree a little bit, but maybe it's better if we don't dig into that. My thought is, let's look forward now that we've had all this massive QE, and we've had this biggest, one of the biggest, most extensive, high-velocity stock market rallies in history. What are we supposed to do going forward? I think everybody knows that's unlikely to continue at the same pace it was for the last 5 years. Everybody knows it was somewhat boosted by the Fed, and we might have more Fed QE coming up, but I think looking forward, what we should do as investors is protect ourselves and be careful. And that's what seems to be happening. There's a lot of people look at ETF flows. The main ETF flows in the United States this year have been out of the beta, you know, beta type products that track the S&P 500, and they're flowing into more diversified products. Lately, we've seen a little bit of interest in the precious metals, that makes sense, but mostly into smarter beta type products. Now, those all still have a correlation to the stock market, but people realizing that in the long term, I want to have a better performance than the actual S&P 500. So that, to me, makes sense. Also, definitely to diversification, global stocks, and it's just looking forward. You have to diversify and protect. So regardless of what the Fed has done, we have to think of going forward. What can we do to make sure we're okay from an investment standpoint? And that's what I keep coming back to, and it's part of the reason I'm at this firm, to precious metals. And if you look at the U.S. government debt trend, it's growing 3 to 4% a year. I mean, that hasn't changed. It might get a little bit better, but the only way to get out of that is to have the either stop growing, have the debt stop growing so fast, or grow the economy faster. And it's just nowhere near there. We have to grow the economy maybe 5 to 6%. We haven't had that type of growth since the 90s, and it's unlikely to get back there. And if the Fed's going to start tightening, there's no way we're going to get there.
No, I mean, so, you know, as we look now, all of a sudden, you know, 5 months ago, 4 months ago, 3 months ago, 2 months ago, the euro currency was going to zero, right? It was going back to par. It was going back and maybe test the all-time lows. And all of a sudden, out of nowhere, we now have a dramatic rally in the euro currency. What does that say to you?
Yeah, well, exactly. That's one thing you and I both learned really early in the pitch. When you hear everybody talking about these extreme levels after the trade has really moved, you know you have to go the other way. That's why we both agreed oil got too cheap. We both agreed that the euro got too cheap. What's really happened, and to me that's the major shift that's probably going to happen this week, is the main reason the euro was so weak and the U.S. was so strong is because we had all this, it was this dichotomy of the U.S. pricing for tightening and the rest of the world just easing. And surprise easing in many cases, including Europe, Japan, Switzerland, and all that and so forth. But right now, as far as Q1 is concerned, Europe is actually growing faster than U.S., maybe 3 to 4 tenths percent, and U.S. in Q1 was barely growing, maybe 0.2%. So that shift is coming back, and I think this is what we've discussed many times on our program. It's mean reversion. The dollar just got way too expensive for reasons that are not happening. That is, the U.S. economy is supposed to blast off. The Fed was tightening, and that's not happening. And this retail sales numbers this week, I think, might have been the major, you know, the straw that just flipped the switch where people realize, oh, okay, so maybe we aren't growing that fast, and maybe the dollar got way too strong. And, oh, by the way, that has actually suppressed this whole U.S. economic growth to some extent. So to me, this is probably a top in the dollar for a while and maybe for a long term, and it probably marks a bottom. I'm thinking this might be a bottom in gold and silver, partly because just look at last year. Gold did not go down last year, despite the fact the dollar had this massive rally. So if we wouldn't go down in that environment, what's it going to take? And if this dollar continues to mean revert, which is more likely to do, as we see U.S. growth is not taking off, and as we take out Fed tightening, gold and silver should be primary beneficiaries.
And I don't disagree. And we're going to talk about more of this when we come back from the break. Everybody, just to let everybody know, ETF Securities is going to now start posting their special reports that they do every week, as well as a special link. I encourage everybody to go check out ETF Securities. They have terrific ETFs, and these are built by people that understand, guys like Mike, that are from the floor, that understand what makes a great market. So I urge you to go to etfsecurities.com, check it out, and there will be their report and their a special link on the Bubba Show at thebubbashow.org, where you guys can check it out. Because again, I'm a big believer in the ETF space used properly, and I'm the biggest believer in ETFSecurities.com because I think they do one hell of a job at what they do. We're with Mike McClone from ETFSecurities.com. We're going to step out here for a break. Make sure you check out thebubbashow.org. We've got a lot of great articles there, as well as what's going to be added when we start getting the regular stuff from ETF Securities. So we'll be back after the break. This is The Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz with Mike McClone. We'll be right back after the break. The Bubba Show. Welcome back to The Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horowitz. So, Mike, first I want to kind of check in on, we just finished the first earnings season, and I know you introduced back around the first of the year that new Zacks earnings ETF. How'd that play out during the earnings season?
It's done well. It's done well. It's been one of the better performances, beat its benchmark. I don't remember the exact numbers offhand. Overall, total earnings in the market beat estimates. But that's one of those unique things in this business that we just have to accept, is they're designed to beat estimates. And it's like, okay, guys, just give us the truth. You know, I mean, it's the truth, but it's just amazing how analysts out there underestimate earnings and how companies focus on underestimating and trying to, and then, of course, beating. And that's the main thing that we really focus on with getting our ZACs, tracking these ZACs ETFs. And the number one thing I like to mention is the products we have here are not for traders. They're for buy and hold. And the ZACs product is the same way, like the ZSML, designed to focus on earnings. But the one thing, key thing about earnings is you can't, once you hear about earnings, you buy a stock, it's already too late. You have to look forward. And that's where we were impressed with ZACs, is they've done a major amount of research on focusing on how can you try to predict the companies that will have the best earnings in the future. And the way they determine that is following earnings estimate revisions. So you get all these estimates from all the stock market analysts out there. And one thing that is biased about them is they always have an excessive number of buys. But one thing that's not biased from all the analysts out there is their estimates of earnings. Yes, it might be a little bit lower, but it's that trend in their estimates. So say if that trend is a little bit higher, I mean, they're increasing their estimates and have a consistently increasing the estimates. ZACs has done a great amount of research just figuring out the methodology to track the companies that have those positive earning estimates trends and put those stocks in an index, and they've done that for us. And that's what we think, you know, going forward, that's the number one thing for stocks anyhow, is future earnings. And so that's what we're focused on. That's what the products, I think, are very good for. That's part of why we launched those ETFs. They're still early, still new, but, you know, for long-term buy and hold investors, you should, the focus is to be able to beat the market in the longer term with these types of products.
And that's absolutely correct. And that's why we look at these, and that's why we have such a great working relationship with ETFSecurities.com, is because this is an investing product, not a trading product. But as you know from listening to The Bubba Show, we do have investments and we have traders, and we have to know what the difference is and know how to separate the two. So, Mike, so, you know, you and I both do a lot of media, and, you know, I know you're involved and you've heard some of the money managers speak in the past. And, you know, I don't know what your overall opinion is, what typically they have to say. But I know, in my opinion, a lot that come on air are more speaking their book than speaking what the real markets are doing. But so I did a spot the other day, and somebody called me up that was a money manager and complained that I didn't indicate that I think the market should go the way he thinks it's going to go. What do you think about something like that?
Yeah, well, that's one thing we all have to be careful of when we listen to ourselves and other people in the media. Everybody has a vested interest. And I do too. I have to admit that. I have to admit I have a vested interest in our products. I don't deny that. And I like to say that first off. And one thing I like to point out for us is we have long, short, and leverage products and everything in Europe, not in the States. And I'm part of a research team that has to be in a similar mode. So I have to be very careful being bearish on gold or silver if they're bullish in Europe. But generally, everybody has a vested interest. They have to be very careful what they're trying to sell. Like, one thing you hear a lot of in my business is all these people say that the gold market and the silver market's manipulated, and virtually all those people have a vested interest in those markets going higher. So you have to be really careful when they say those kind of things.
Right. And I mean, I think that's just important. I mean, you know, you're one thing about you, and I've obviously we've talked for months. I've known you for a long time, and I've been on with you on air as well. And if you think gold is a little heavy, you're going to say, I think it's a little bit heavy. I mean, you're not going to go ahead and spew something that you don't believe, but you also will explain, you know, your position. I think that's the most important part. See, what I think about information is to give people the best information that you can give them, and then let them make the decision. You can help them, because if you do like a gold product, you know, or the metals, then you have the ETF to go with it, glitter. And again, that's what you're looking to do. But your long-term goal is always to make it better for the client or the customer or the person buying it, because, of course, it's in your best interest that it goes in the correct direction as well, correct?
Well, correct. In fact, earlier in the year when gold went to 1,300, I put that out in a report. Gold's pretty expensive at 1,300, and unless the dollar really reverses, it's unlikely to go higher from here, at least in the short term. And it came back, and now it got down to 1,180, and here we're back above 1,200. So that was certainly a fact. And Ferns, one thing I get asked a lot about is what's the better product to buy? And I think the best answer for any type of investor that's completely defensible is I always go to the basket of precious metals. For instance, yesterday I had a gentleman who's interested in diversifying deciding his portfolio and commodities out for 10 years. And I suggested glitter, which is just a basket of precious metals. And the reason is it's completely defensible. When you have a basket of precious metals, 50% of the demand for those precious metals right now is for industrial purposes. A lot of that's from growing markets in Asia. Now, where's that going to be in 10 years? And one thing you never have a problem with is contango. And if you don't want to know what contango is, then you know you should be careful buying any type of commodity, because they have to be involved in the futures market, but a physically backed precious metal never has to worry about those things. So I always like to focus on something that's defensible that can look back and defend, even if it doesn't go right, to at least say, well, that's still probably the safer way to go. And one thing we learn in this business is if you're against the consensus, even though you think you're going to be right, you have to be very, very careful, because you can get fired if you're wrong. But if you're with the consensus and you're wrong, you're unlikely to get fired. And that's a problem for people on the other end listening, because you have to understand that sometimes it's against the consensus views that are the most valuable.
That's exactly right, and that's what I love about you, Mike. You always bring it up like it is straight. So, you know, we haven't had a chance to chat since the jobs number last week. What'd you think?
Oh, I think it was nice to see that we're okay. It was, I think what most people had priced in was a bad number, and it didn't happen, so the market rallied. And actually, one thing I noticed a lot, there was just a significant amount of outflows in precious metals on that day in ETFs. And I think that was because people had bought protection, worrying that the trend in worse than expected data would continue to happen. So the number was okay. But one thing about we know about unemployment numbers is they're seasonally adjusted. They get adjusted. They get reset, and they're backward looking. The good news is we're okay. At least, you know, the unemployment rate, at least, is much better than it was a few years ago. The bad news I see is you look at this trend in economic misses. You know, and there's a lot of databases out there that track the economic misses. The trend has clearly been the case, like retail sales. It's just we keep missing and doing worse than expected. And what I like to do point is, if you factor in the fact that we should be doing better because the energy prices have dropped and because unemployment's lower, and when you're not, that's when I really start to worry, and that's why I'm a bit worried. But the good news, I think, is for this market, at least, the more we take Fed tightening out the market, the more the markets like to hang in there. The question is, how long does that last? And that seems to have been the trend this year. Since the data has been bad, the Fed tightening keeps coming out, although most people say it's still a when rather than an if.
Now, we take a look at the bond market. The bond market says it's quickly, right? I mean, I can't believe how volatile the bonds have become over the last couple of months. What are you seeing there?
I'm glad you mentioned it, because to me that's the most disconcerting thing I've seen in the last few weeks, is this pretty significant spike in bond yields. Now, I view bonds as pretty attractive because I don't see inflation. Right now, the 10-year note's 2.2% knocking around there. The main reason bond yields have gone up is because yields in Europe have gone up, and there's a massive international spread between the two. Bill Gross is involved in that trade. We all know there's a lot of leveraged money, maybe because oil's gone up a little bit. But as far as bond yields staying higher, they need to have sustained inflation or a problem with the currency or something like that. And to me, that's the dream. I'd love to see sustained amount of demand pull inflation, where inflation is going up because there's more demand, and you're just not seeing that in retail sales. So I think there's going to be a buying opportunity in the bond market, but that's one of the things that, as far as you and I, certainly being from the bond pit in Chicago, you have to respect the lower tide and higher tide impact of the bond market. If the bond market keeps going down, anything's going to have a problem, down in price, up in yield. But I think this correction is probably a buying opportunity.
Did you ever think in your life you would see the Treasury bonds be the most volatile product on the entire floor of the CME?
Now, that's the problem, is this migration of volatility. Did not, but volatility is generally bad for equities. And that's one thing that's been wonderful. We've had this long period of low volatility, 13% in the VIX. It's still hanging out there. That's the longest period in modern history. We stay this area. But we started out last year with a pickup in volatility in currency market. Now we're getting volatility in the bond market. And generally, volatility will migrate to other markets. You know, I keep hoping it'll stay away from the equity market, but we have to be careful that it might And generally, that probably should calm down, but volatility generally is a problem for investors. It's an opportunity for traders, but for investors, you have to be a little careful, make sure you diversify and protect yourself from that. And one thing we all know is volatility in the equity market has been very low. The problem is it gets to keep people complacent, and it almost always leads to higher volatility later.
This has been Mike McClone from ETFSecurities.com. You can check him out on our website. We'll be putting up his report and a special link so you can check him out. We ran out of time. This is The Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Orbs. We'll see you back here tomorrow. Same time, same station. Thanks, everybody. Thanks, Mike.
You grab a piece of something that you think is going to last. Well, you wouldn't even know it.
Revolutionary Talk for Revolutionary Times. Liberty Talk FM.